Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, web notice posts covering finance and property news. Now, here's a question, Edwin. When you are doing a Monday evening rant on a Wednesday, is it still a Monday evening rant?
It's a what the hell rant.
Anyway, we're doing it a couple of days late because of various circumstances.
Because of the coronation, didn't you become King Martin the fourth?
I didn't even follow it, really. I have to say, and it's interesting, quite a few people over here in the UK weren't that interested in it. There were a couple of street parties on the Sunday, but we also had a lot of rain, typical for the UK. So it rained on Saturday and it rained on Monday, which was a holiday. So, this is the UK for you, right? But I must tell you, Edwin, the rain that we get here in the UK is nice, gentle stuff. It's not like the sort of torrential downpours that you get in Australia where, you know, what happens is the rain comes down and then bounces off the pavement or off the road and then, you know, bounces up your legs again. You don't get that in the UK. It's just sort of gentle, continuous.
Well, you know, that's because your government isn't cloud seeding, I guess. That's just a conspiracy that tells me.
Well, and makes you wonder. But the question is, has the madness only just started, Edwin, or is it continuing? What do you think?
I think the madness is going. It all started with this coronation. Now, I believe it cost you guys $230 million or $320 million or something for this coronation, and where did it come from? I think it was the money that was supposed to go to the homeless or something. So there was a minus of 230 or 320 million for the homeless, and all power to you guys. So we've got our own issues with the
homeless later in the year. That's what they're saying, you know. So think of it as an investment.
Albo and Co. Proprietary Limited, Real Estate Proprietary Limited, is gone a step further than you. He's bringing in the tourists in the plane loads. The only problem is the permanent tourists, or the pathways for permanent residency is an interesting topic that the WeChat chatterers are looking at very, very closely and just seeing. How many people are really going to be staying and not going back? So look, it is, but the madness continues. And look, Blacktown being the wild, wild west just keeps on giving. It's the gift that just keeps on giving, Martin.
Well, yeah, this one is really interesting, right? Third time lucky, is that the question we should be asking?
Yeah, look, third time lucky. If you recall, we talked about this in August last year. When we went to auction, it was being underquoted. At that time, they purchased it in 2021 for $745,000. They spent about, I'd say, because it was done by a flipper, builder, flipper, probably spent $100,000 what they did to it at his cost. Plus $40,000 in holding costs, and the guide at that time was $800,000. I called it then. I said he wouldn't sell, and the expectation was a lot higher. It was $950,000. But the biggest question was the occupation certificate, Martin, and that to the renovation to the back. I questioned the agents then in 2021 in August when I inspected it early August before the auction. I looked at it on behalf of one of our clients. That was looking in the area at the time, and I noticed the extension. I noticed the works that had been done, and it was all built on the rear deck. And I said to the agent, "Do you have AC?" There was no answer from that. No email correspondence. But look, without going into further, spending any further time, energy, or otherwise, I knew that they didn't have an occupation certificate, let alone a DA approval. But the auction then flopped. It was put back on the market, with the frenzy, the FOMO frenzy of 2023. It was put back on the market in March. It actually got sold for 880,000. But then I thought it was rather interesting. And then now it's back on the market. So something's gone amiss. And in the tweets that I sent to you, in the images that I sent to you from the tweets, there's correspondence between the agent and myself currently asking him if there's an OC and if he's got if the occupation certificate or the approvals for the rear extension. And his comeback is referred to the contract in the current contract. I had a look at it, and lo and behold, there is a special condition that is rather interesting. For the purchaser to be made well aware that there is no occupation certificate. There's not, the extension wasn't done under DA approval from the council, and basically buyer beware. Caveat emptor, Martin. Caveat emptor.
Well, it's there in black and white now, I suppose, finally. But this is a really important object lesson, isn't it, Edwin? That you've got to ask these questions on the way in before you you commit. Because, well, if you don't actually do the right questioning on the way in, you could end up with a lemon, and that lemon could cost you a lot because, well, if it's not actually available for occupation, that's a problem. If there's no certification on the development or the improvement or the extension, that's a problem. And that can be a lot of money.
Look, definitely. And the thing is that the buying it looks nice and polished, right? Mm. On the surface, it looks nice and polished. But at the end of the day, as they say, it's just a turd that's just been polished. our followers can get a little bit more insights as to what's going on and how I tease the selling agents. But the question that needs to be asked is this, with all these reforms and all these changes and all this legislation being thrown around by the premiers, by the governments, by the local governments and everybody else, it really doesn't change the landscape, Martin. There is a lot of corruption out there. There is a lot of shenanigans out there. There are a lot of loopholes that a new legislation comes on and there's 10 loopholes that to get around it. It's just ongoing. Nothing changes for the better. It's the greed of the industry, the greed of what the it's the byproduct of really where we are at the moment with the people's need for accommodation, for that security, that longevity of security particularly for young families, and unfortunately, they are the victims. They are the victims, as you and I have been saying for a very long time. It's these first home buyers, the people that are wanting to buy a house to make it a lifestyle, longevity of peaceful life in an area that they want to grow old in and watch their kids grow up in, go to school and so forth. Unfortunately, they can't because of all the shenanigans and all these ad hoc regulations, legislation, and everything else in order to keep these Ponzi going and the market red hot. So obviously, so that the government coffers can be refilled, because they've certainly used up a lot of money over the last couple of years.
Well, Edwin, I had an interesting conversation through one of my one-on-ones the other day. This is a couple buying for the first time, and it's a relatively modern property that they're looking at. There was a vendor survey provided as part of the contract. And, the vendor survey basically said nothing to see here. Everything's absolutely fine. And so they were asking me, well, surely the vendor survey must have some relevance to us, because if basically there's the stuff that is not in the survey, don't we have recourse? And I said, well, you want to be very careful about that. Don't assume that, right? Because the vendor survey is really a marketing instrument rather than actually a real survey instrument. And I said, my perspective was always that you should get your own survey done, because then you've got recourse. So they did. And they actually got a separate survey done. It cost them, $4,000 or something. But interestingly, it brought up five or six quite considerable issues. Now, as a result of that, they decided that what they would do was negotiate the price down. And so they're still progressing with this property, but they've actually saved themselves about $150,000 simply because they actually got an independent survey. Now, if they hadn't done that, they would have been up for that $150,000 to, you know, fix stuff that was there for obvious reasons, not necessarily reported in the vendor's survey, but actually, frankly, it was stuff that needed to be fixed. So it is interesting. It just shows you, if you're on the wrong side of the transaction and you don't do your due diligence, you can get caught out.
And this is what we're seeing over and over again. And this is where a lot of people, and because of the frenzy that's out there in the main cities, obviously, yeah, the regions are acting a little bit differently. That we're seeing a lot more listings come up in the regions, but where there's where we now got the winter blues, predominantly in the Sydney metro areas, where the numbers are going down. People are just taking silly risks. Unnecessarily, all on the assumption that the vendor's agent, the selling agent, is also helping them out and acting on their behalf, which is the first mistake that you make as a buyer, thinking that the selling agent is your friend or is a professional that's going to help you out. That's just something, and things need to change, Martin. And I dare say sooner than later, we're going to start hearing a lot more about these issues that we've been talking about, that we've been very vocal about, and these dangerous liaisons that selling agents are building with building inspectors. Because let's face it, the building inspection, that was deregulated in 2008, 2009. Before that, in order to have a licensed building inspector, you basically had to have a builder's license, if not also a building engineer's license or qualifications. And on top of that, you had to be very articulate with the English language and in the written form, because the reports were very, very comprehensive. But come 2008, it was deregulated. Now every man and his dog can be a building inspector, and it's quite interesting who's out there doing building inspections and what the background is. And as in my manner, I just say a lot of them would know the difference between a roof tile and a floor tile if it smacked them in the head. So that's the caliber. I mean, and these people are being trained, and they take up franchises under the different companies, and they're the ones that are providing the reports. They've got no clue. They predominantly, what I've been told from one of the big franchise groups, that most of the people are coming out of the IT industry into buying franchises because it's for them. They see it easy because it's really cut and paste material from the internet or documents. But they don't really know what they're looking at, what they're looking for, and potential issues. Anyway, we posted a lot of that over the years, you and I have, and we brought it to the attention of our followers. And, it's nothing new for us.
No, that's right. And it is also worth underscoring that, of course, the people who are actually providing the surveys should have an indemnity. And that indemnity is worth asking about, because, again, from my experience, in some cases they don't actually even have the official security. The whole point is that if you actually are taking their advice and they give you a survey, there has to be recourse if they don't catch something important. But again, that's an issue. But we could go on talking all day about that. But caveat emptor is the critical thing. Buyer beware. You cannot assume that the agent is actually working for you. That's really the important thing. Let's move on and talk about the easier pathways to permanent residency and citizenship, right? Let's open the doors. Let's bring everybody in, Edwin.
Yeah, well, that's right. Like, one of the main things that they were talking about, the media have been really on about, is bringing in people to fulfill the roles of the in the areas of aged care. because it is an area that we don't have a lot of workers. There's a lot of need, so they made it easier for a lot of people. And you know, the interesting thing that the WeChat chatter has been discussing on the forums and the investment forums is really how easy it's going to be for a lot of these people from areas of Asia and you know, in Southeast Asia, where you've also you've got a level of English, not necessarily a high level of understanding in the written English, but also a moderate level just to get by, and how the pathway into PR, so they can get a temporary visa fairly quickly, and come in and. You had to basically work here for 3 years. Now it's gone down to 2 years. You don't have to have a certificate four anymore from these countries. You can have anything up to a certificate three, which is really a nothing certificate, and just get your employer back home that to say that yes, you've worked in that industry for 2 years, and you can get on the plane and make your way over here, and you get. You get allocated to a cushy job, and within 2 years you can get PR. But on top of that, Martin, not only with that industry, but with a lot of the other migrants that are coming in, before they had to wait a certain period of time before they could obtain the PR and then be able to buy a property. They're fast tracking everything. This government is really fast tracking everything. So it's, as I think, I can't remember who it was that posted on Twitter, two industries that are benefiting from this is mining, from the budget is mining and the property sector. Everybody else can whistle Dixie.
Yes, and it's worth underscoring, of course, that it's 700,000 is the number, I think, over 2 years that... Treasury is estimated 700,000, right? And a lot of those, as you say, will be people who will do work perhaps for a lower level of remuneration and will have some skills, but not necessarily as skills that you might expect. So it's a way of, firstly, keeping wages down and also trying to support a business, quote unquote, who claim they can't get enough workers. But what they really mean is enough cheap workers. But then, as you say, they've also then shifted the goalposts in terms of, fast-tracking this, that, and the others. And, of course, that all pulls more people in into the property market, either in the rental sector or, indeed, to buy. And both of that then puts more upward pressure on property prices and on rentals. And, Big Australia is here. Big Australia is the strategy that the Albanese government is running with. Unfortunately, I know some would say, well, Australia is huge, massive land. Well, what's the problem? Well, the trouble is that everybody is concentrated in a very small area of the land mass, and therefore it puts a huge amount of pressure on infrastructure in those areas. And I still don't see enough discussion about the infrastructure investment that's required. And that's everything, not just houses, but, roads and everything else, schools and everything else. Nobody wants to talk about that. So all you're seeing is just floods of people. I'm interested that the WeChat chatters are on about this and, see an opportunity.
Well, they have. And if you recall in our discussions back in 2019, they're all over the immigration policies. Yeah. And this is when we alluded our followers and our viewers to the changes. And we knew back then that regardless of what happened, back then we were saying regardless what post those changes, regardless who takes the helm at the election, it was already primed. The fix was already in. So even if ScoMo got handed another term, we could speculate. It may not have been as drastic as what it is now with Albo, but the fix was in, and this is what the WeChat chatterers pay very, very close attention to these investment groups, because they are very tied up with migration agencies and law firms, and this is where we pass this information on to our our followers and our viewers in order to keep them ahead of the mainstream. So this is why I always I refer to a lot of my Twitter posts and say is that the fix was already in, regardless who took power. You and I called it back then, and here we are. So it was really a choice and a decision that the general public made, and we got nobody else to blame other than ourselves for what we've got right now, because the election could have gone a much different way, but for other distractions, a lot of independents that were against the immigration policies that were about to be released and acted on, didn't have much of a say. Don't have much of a say, and here we are.
Absolutely. Well, both sides of politics are on the same big Australia path. And of course, Treasury is talking about that too. So it is an ideological position that, the mainstream political parties and indeed the media are all, on the same track. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right decision. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to actually end up with a better Australia, I think, as a result. Now, talking about making things better, of course, there's another interesting question that we should discuss a little bit, I think, which is the real estate industry itself, because you and I have argued for a long time that the real estate industry needs to be cleaned up. And, the more you watch and see this happening, the more you're convinced, and I'm convinced, that there are major steps that need to be taken.
Look, there are, Martin, but there's a key ingredient that we're going to talk about, obviously, that hasn't really been discussed. It hasn't been put on the table, and this is what we're going to talk about as to what we feel is that ingredient, is the catalyst that will bring about the change. So you've got the governments working, the state governments, from most of the state governments are working on basically on three fronts, and have been working on three fronts from since early 2000, and that's education. In New South Wales with the education reform of 2020, March 2020, where there was with regards to the training and licensing and what it meant to the requirements around education, CPD, continuous professional development training, and so forth. So that they threw that at the industry, thinking that was going to solve the problems. But you can even go as far back as when we got the Property and Stock Agents Act in 2002, there was a lot of changes from the previous act to the 2002 edition, effectively, and a lot of things were meant to get better. But did they get better, or did it just mean that agencies and agents and the industry just looked for more loopholes? I take the latter as what happened. Obviously, then we got the underquoting under the new rules and laws and regulations. Then you got underquoting rules and regs that came in 2016. They made a big deal about it. They made a big song and dance about it. But has it gotten any better? I believe it's gotten worse, and in particular over the last 3 years, and more so this year. We had a 2021 blitz on Super Saturday, if you recall that Super Saturday, where there was about 1,200 auctions in Sydney, and Fair Trading were out there on the Super Saturday blitz, and there was a lot of reports, and there was agencies that got fined. I mean, the most, I think, that the whole tally of the fines that were issued, there was something like 34 or 37 fines, but I mean, it all tallied to pittance, I think it was about $26,000 from memory, all combined. Then you've got the recent rental beating guidelines. Now you've got also the proposed minimum standard rental housing guidelines that they're talking about. The current premier's talking about stamping out putting reforms around the no grounds eviction notices and so forth. So they're the two front ones. And the last one, obviously, was the new changes to licenses in charge around supervision guidelines, which also came in around March 2020. So all this was done, or has been done, and they've been working at this since 2002. But with no avail, Martin, let me ask you a question. From all this, all these regulations, legislation that you've probably been around, heard of, watched the news, read the news since 2002 till now. In your opinion, in all honesty, has the industry gotten better or has it gotten worse?
Well, I would argue that it's got a lot worse. And I think particularly over the last 5 years, Edwin, and I think that's been driven partly by, you know, high degree demand for property, the very significant price rises through COVID, you know, the greed that's out there. And the industry, of course, consolidating, frankly, cutting ever more corners, spending less time on individual opportunities, all of those things. What is happening is that the culture of the industry is getting worse rather than better. And the regulatory changes and the other guidance, if I take New South Wales as an example, really has made very, very little difference. And in fact, when I talk to agents, they sort of laugh it off and say, well, you know, this stuff really doesn't make any difference the way that we actually behave week in, week out. And they also make the point, interestingly, that they've got many younger people now in the industry who have got less experience. And whilst they might have a little bit more paper qualifications, they actually don't have any experience. So, in fact, the experience that was there perhaps, you know, a few years back has gone as well. So it just becomes then a completely commercial transaction. Cut as many corners as you can just to get the turnover happening. And, of course, the final point is in the last 6 to 12 months, with the volumes going down, the desperation stakes amongst agents has gone through the roof. So, of course, they're going to cut corners. Of course, they're going to do anything to try and get a deal. They'll sell their grandmother, or some will anyway. They'll sell their grandmother to get a deal. So, yeah, the industry is, I think, a lot worse. And what I would come back to is that the program of change that the state government of New South Wales has put through has been completely ineffective and has actually ended up in the worst state. And there's the big, big issue on the table that nobody wants to talk about, which is the whole question of payments and remuneration, which is, of course, where the thing has to start and stop, doesn't it?
100%. And that's it, Martin. That is what you won't get reform, you won't get change, you won't get... Yeah, you can bring out new laws, regulations, legislation. You can make agents, have 3 meals a day, you know, whatever. Put them on a diet, whatever you want to do, right? Make them stand on their head at the open for inspections. Juggle fiery knives or whatever. but nothing's going to change unless we change the remuneration, the payment structure. I think the commission structure that we're on, that the selling side of things, the selling agents, and also the property management, I think that is what needs to be broken up, what needs to be looked at very carefully. So, I mean, and this is what we're going to, you know, obviously talk about. As far as I'm concerned, and these are my points. I mean, you could add some more, or we could chat as we go. I don't believe that the commission incentivizes the agent to work any smarter or harder on behalf of the vendor.
Well, I agree. The commission structure is get a deal, any price, because I get a proportion. Obviously, if I can get a bigger one, that's good. But it's about just turning property over, isn't it? It's making a sale at any point. And if you can persuade the vendor to come down a bit and you can persuade the buyer to come up a bit, then you've got a sale and then you get a commission. Actually, there has to be a different model here. To my mind, linking the payment to the transaction value is the first mistake.
That's right, because look, you only have to look at what we've seen over the... like even going back to the reforms, right? And we're going back to when the state government, when Victor Dominello was jumping up and down and was making that, all these things around underquoting around 2021, there was all these issues and everything. And then agents started providing building inspection reports, building inspection reports on behalf of the vendors. But look at what they did with that. They took that, as you said, as a marketing tool to better present the property, to say everything was okay. We just gave them a further tool to be even more corrupt, a further piece of ammunition against the prospective buyer. When you look at what they're doing for the sellers, for their own clients. You know, some say, oh yeah, but agents work, you know, they work harder on a commission because the more they get for the client, the more they the more commission they get. Well, to a certain point that stands, but beyond a certain point, when you're looking at the extra to make an extra $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, agents don't give two rats. They really don't give two rats, because, and hence the reason why I argue, why is it that if agents, and you see them posting stuff on Facebook and every other social media platform, how they sold the property that had so much inquiry and so many people at the open for inspection, they sold it in the first week. That doesn't tell me that they achieved the best optimal price, right?
Mm.
It just tells me that they just sold it quick in order to, but they hoodwinked their client to believe that that's the look how wonderful we are. We sold it within a week for you, and we got this much. And yeah, we told you it was going to get 1.5, and we got you 1.6. Well, could you have squeezed another 10? Could you have squeezed another 20? Could you have squeezed another 30 out of it? I'm sure you could have, but it doesn't. But they don't. Why don't they want to? Because that 10,000. 20,000, 30,000, when you multiply by 1.5%, which is the average commission, it means jack nothing. It means less time that they can spend on trying to get other listings from the neighbors and so forth. So you've got these scenarios that then, but to look at it more in depth is, I question, why did the auction campaigns go from what used to be known as an 8-week auction campaign to a 6-week auction campaign to a 4-week auction campaign? And now we got, in certain parts of Sydney, we got 3-week auction campaigns, Martin. and the market is so hot, why not give more people more time to fall in love with the property and beg, borrow, and steal more money from the relatives and the bank in order to pay more for it, because it doesn't benefit them, right? That's one of my pet hates is and also obviously then you've got the time that they spend on the open for inspections. Man, are they got to be that they start at 10 o'clock, or some start at 9:30 on the Saturday morning, and they finish at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because they've got to go to the beach. Or they've got to go out in the afternoon. I mean, this isn't really working for the vendor, right? So it's all minimal, and it's all around this the payment structure.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I think your point about the reduced time is the most significant factor, because I've seen it too. You know, campaigns are sort of on steroids; they're running much quicker. Open inspections, you have less opportunities, less time at the property, which means, of course, that you shuffle people through quicker. But it's all about, they want to spend less time committed to that particular property, but still make the same money off the back of it. And that's the way to think about it. So the question is, how many hours have they actually spent, right, in actually doing the work to be able to actually know the property, sell the property, negotiate, get a good deal? And if you divided the commission on average that's paid by the number of hours, well, it's a disgracefully high number, isn't it?
Oh, let's give them the good news. So you've, on average, I've worked it out. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've worked it out that, and I put out a similar report back years ago. And it's still roughly the same. It comes out because of the price changes and the values. I mean, there was a time where real estate agents would be getting 3% commission plus GST, right? Then it went down to 2.5, then to 2%. Currently, I just work on averages. So currently, the average number of hours to sell a property, that stays around the same. So the average hours spent by a selling agent on selling a property is around about 17 hours, right? On average. So currently the average home in Sydney, this is freestanding home in Sydney, is valued at 1.4, right? The average commission currently is 1.5% plus GST, but we'll leave it at 1.5%. So when you break that down, Martin, holiday or two pay, because the average hourly rate is $1,235 per hour that you're paying, that that vendors are paying the selling agents to get them a mediocre result, especially if it's being sold by way of auction. So this is the fee that selling agents. So why? So this is what I mean, Martin. This is where it comes back to is why would real estate agents want to really do the right thing by the prospective buyers, by the vendors, by the public in general, if it meant doing the right thing is going to prolong the sale a little bit longer, right? Why would they want to educate themselves better? Why would they want to present themselves better if it's a quick, easy turnaround? If I can get $1,235 per hour on selling the property, that's it's going to be over and done with within weeks, particularly in this climate. Well, they haven't got time to spend on themselves. They haven't got time to spend on education. They haven't got time to. They want to go out there hungry. It's the commission structure. It's a remuneration structure that really doesn't force the individuals, the industry, to be better educated, to come up a notch or two or three in the way that they represent themselves and the industry. But why should they when it's money for jam? I mean, and by the way, this hourly rate does not include the average marketing fee paid in Sydney by an individual to sell a home is $5,000 to $7,000. So that is on top of the 1.5% commission.
Absolutely. And I think those marketing fees, again, it's another fur fee, right? Because years ago that would have been included in the total deal, and then it was pulled out separately. And then they give you all the spiel as to why you should spend more on the marketing, et cetera, et cetera. And again, if you ask the question, well, so how much time and effort is involved in actually doing, creating the collateral for marketing and then doing the marketing? I mean, again, the hourly rates there would be pretty astronomical too. And the point about this is that the base activity actually is relatively similar, whether it's, 1.4 million or 5 million, right? I mean, there's not a huge amount of difference, right? And so if you think about it, and what we're just saying there is that with this sliding commission structure, the bigger the value, the bigger the hourly rate, which is nuts.
Exactly. And what do they actually do? What do they actually advise the vendors? What other than push for auction, a push for marketing campaign, push for more fees? That really, if you start looking seriously at the marketing fees, most of that, 60-70% of that is spent on marketing the agent or the agency and not the not the property itself. I mean that's that's another argument for another day. But so what do we do? My theory is, Martin, is we need to adopt, or the industry, the government has to adopt or start looking a lot closer at a fee-for-service model, a fee-for-service. Now, I've shared this on years ago on LinkedIn, and I was berated by the by some in the industry, but the thing is, Martin, is that we know that there are a couple of things that happen. Agencies or agents take on a sale of a property, and when times aren't as good, people, there aren't more buyers out there than sellers. We end up with the reverse. There's more sellers than buyers. Agents basically take on the role, and that could be sitting on the property for months, and they go on to the second agent. And I've been in the industry to even see properties go to the third agent before the homes get sold. Right. So unless you're the selling agent, you don't get paid. You don't get paid your commission. And more than likely, there's less and less marketing fees. So you're really, as an agency, you're hemorrhaging. But if it's on a fee for service, there is an understanding that whatever, no matter what you do, you're going to get paid along the way. You like, think of it as a solicitor, as a lawyer, as a barrister acting for you, right? And that's how it should be, as far as I'm concerned. And you provide the invoices along the way. You provide your hours that you work. You come to an agreement as to, you know, what, you know, what service is going to require what fee. And I truly believe that when the industry adopts this, there will be change, and there will be an adoption to also be better educated. There'll be an adoption by the industry as a whole to look more into the regulations and the legislation that is that surrounds us, because we're going to, you know, the industry is going to be working you know, in better stead, and the outcomes will be all around will be a lot better. So that's part of my belief in as to what needs to happen for change to real change to happen in our industry.
Yeah, and I guess the fee for service model would actually give then more focus from the REA and you know, from the real estate agents themselves, because it's then about actually behaving more professionally, but having to do certain things and being accountable for those certain things, because at the moment there's so little transparency about what they do and how they do it. You know, there's no reporting on hours or anything like that, right? So there's a really, really important philosophy here. And I know McGrath some years ago put it quite well, didn't they, about, you know, when it's really hot, well, you can just basically stick a bit of carbon up and your buyers will call you, right? Is it different? Is it different, though, when in fact you've got to work for it?
Well, that's right, Martin. And this is the thing. And on the other side of that equation, you've also got the property management teams, right? So when you look at the property management teams, they're and this is why a lot of the great, the better property managers left the industry, and they've moved over to the sales side, to the dark side. But the property managers, they work on a commission base as well. And on average, the commission for a property man to manage a property is 5% of the weekly rent. So my figures are around about $45-$47 per week that you get to manage a property. That is a tiresome. That is a very it's underrewarded method of payment, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I'm concerned, property management teams should be earning a hell of a lot more for what they do for the landlords to look after a property and to manage a property and to manage tenants in the property and all the administrative work and the paperwork that they have to do. Hence the reason why, because they're not remunerated, they're not rewarded properly. The better ones leave the industry. It just becomes too hard. And George speaks about this a lot, because, you know, about the issues around the property management teams, the stress and the pressure that there's so much stress and pressure that they're under, to the point where insurance companies are taking note of this, and a lot of property management teams, are not going to be insured in the near future because of all the issues and all the claims around the property management arena. So this is the fee for service model would help and benefit that side of the equation of the real estate office, right? Because you could charge accordingly as opposed to these. The pittance that they get for what they do, as far as I'm concerned. So, yes, look, going back to what you were saying with regards to John McGrath, where he put it in times like this, you could scribble your phone number on a piece of cardboard, stick it on your front fence, and you'll get buyers lining up for over a block, but I also say, Martin, is that, good or bad times, one, you don't need a selling agent to give your property away, right? And you don't need a buyer's agent to throw their hands up in the air to throw money away that's not theirs to pay silly dollars for something that you could have done yourself without having to pay a commission. And you could have done it yourself to give a property away and not having to pay a commission, because in a lot of the cases, I believe that properties are undersold and are overpaid. And you hear a lot of stories. I've shared the one of a buyer's agent that beat me to a property over in Leila Park, came in. I outbid me by $80,000. He wasn't going to auction, but when I say outbid me, it was being sold by private treaty. But the offer was $80,000 than what I had offered, because I knew the issues that were around the property. And she came in from the city, gave the agent $80,000 more and a 66W, in other words, waiving the cooling off period, for something that didn't do any due diligence and just threw money away. I feel sorry for the first-time buyer, because the agent told me it was a first-time buyer that she was acting for. I feel sorry for the first-time buyer when he finds out the issues that he's got under the house and around the house after paying so much for it. So this is what you get, Martin. So I think the government needs to look at this seriously. Changes to the remuneration, changes to the compensation, whatever you want to call it, because unless you start looking at this with a microscope, unless you start looking at the way that agents are rewarded, all we're going to end up with a further, regardless of how much more regulations, regardless of how much more legislation the government throws at the industry, the industry is very good at finding loopholes.
Yeah, and I suppose bottom line is it would actually enable the industry to regain its professional reputation, which frankly is pretty abysmal at the moment. I think you'd also weed out corruption as well. You know, you'd actually make it much, much more transparent and therefore less easy to rot the system. And I suppose that also another positive, you might actually then find that the whole education and skills enhancement would be actually seen as something that was really worthwhile, whereas frankly today people just go around it. And, the bottom line is that vendors would actually end up with a better outcome. Buyers would actually have a better outcome. And the agencies and the real estate industry itself would be improved. So it's a win-win-win-win-win, isn't it?
Look, all around. And in a way, it'll also feel that agencies will also move back into the old traditional, what we used to know as a real estate agency many decades ago, and that was they did both property management and sales. Whereas now you've got most of the agencies, most of the offices out there just focus on sales, because that's where the cream is. That's where you make it. But unfortunately, look, a lot of people that are out there aren't doing the sales even as hot as the market is at the moment, because at the end of the day the numbers aren't there, right? But they still get called to do market appraisals. They still get called to give potential vendors an indication of the value of the property and that. So this is goes back to, well, there should be a remuneration, there should be a reward for everything that the agent does. And I think people themselves will start taking the agents a lot more seriously, as you say, and the industry will jump up a few notches, because I think at the moment we're sitting one notch below politicians.
Not a good place to be. Let's just talk about the numbers briefly, Edwin. So interestingly, we continue to see the numbers easing back as we move into winter. So on the 1st of May in Sydney, 15,851. This week, 15,330. No surprise there. And the winter blues, well, they're settling, aren't they?
Look, they are. This is more of a time where you just got to be frosty. You just got to be Tyson. You just got to do your due diligence. You really need to know. I'm not saying to people don't buy. I'm just simply saying there's a lot of emotion out there. There's more emotion than what you really sometimes it frightens me what I'm watching, what I am seeing, and more around those issues of, go crazy. If you've made money elsewhere, you want to throw money out of property, go crazy. But do your due diligence. Find out if the property is what the agent's telling you it is, and what their report is saying that it is. Because if it's not, you're only going to be spending a lot more, an extra 10, 15, who knows, even an extra 20% later on down the track to fix the issues that you weren't made aware of. So this is more of a time to be more diligent with all those areas. Not all the suburbs are acting the same as you and I know, depending on what suburb. And look, the unfortunate thing is a lot of our followers and a lot of the people that have reached out, that don't have the benefits that in a way that we have. And that is, Mark, you'd be surprised how many transactions or how many properties have been transacted on the WeChat platform. We've shared about that, how other platforms outside of REA and Domain, you see, we're seeing a lot of that happening. But look, this is what happened in 21, what happened in 22, the preceding the winter blues of 21 and 22, we got the rise of listing numbers in spring. And it somewhat changed the nature of the markets again. So, it's a week by week thing that we've got to look at. The numbers, study them carefully. Don't be too quick to pull out the checkbook, I would say.
Absolutely, yes. Caution sometimes. And look, looking at Melbourne, on the 1st of May, 24710 this week, 24273. So again, another slight fall in Melbourne. And also, if we look at the auctions, the numbers are down there as well. So both listings and auctions on the way down. It's going to be quiet for the next few months. The really interesting question will be what happens September, October time, right? How will the impact of those interest rate rises, how will the increased demand react to that? And therefore, I think that caution is probably a good strategy at the moment. And I always say to people, there will always be more property. It's not like we're going to actually, run out of property. There will always be property. It's just a matter of waiting and timing.
Yeah, look, it is. And definitely do not get caught up in the emotion of the day.
Yeah,
it is frightening, and as you said earlier on, Martin, where you instructed your client on the one to one, and whether you're spending an extra $600, $700, $2,000, depending on how extensive the report is, on a new build, it could be up to $3,000-$4,000, depending on what you're looking for, how big of a property it is, and so forth, and how many reports I have to go through. So it's a worthwhile spend. It's a worthwhile investment in order to not to end up with a $150,000 bill that you've got no recourse for later on down the track. I mean, $150,000, that's more changing to what I'm seeing out there in terms of the defects. And this is the time where a lot of this defective property is being sold. And going back to the beginning of the show, Martin, the Blacktown property, that's a classic. You put that clause in the special condition. You hope that the team that's going to be acting for the silly buyer that doesn't pick that up, or the buyer doesn't really care, doesn't inform the conveyancer that there's been extensive renovations, because the two bamboozled by the shiny stone bench tops, the Caesar stone bench tops in the kitchen, and the new bathroom tiles, and who knows? I'd be surprised if it doesn't sell at auction. I'd be surprised if it sells for less than 900.
Well, these bright shiny things, attracts the eye, but you've got to look elsewhere, and that's why this is a really critical conversation. And just to round out numbers, Sydney rentals, just over 10,600 available for rent in the Sydney area at the moment. So, you know, there's still a little bit of momentum there, but we'll maybe touch that in more detail in another show. But before we go, very, very important tip of the week, right? It's getting colder down there in the Southern Hemisphere. I don't know, I was talking to somebody in Melbourne the other day who said, it's so cold, it's unbelievable. So there's a few things you should be thinking about.
Yeah, look, practical things. Get a step ladder, poke your head through the manhole, and check to see what kind of insulation you've got up in the roof void, in the you might be surprised, you might not even have insulation.
There seem to me to be a lot of properties in Australia that don't have insulation. I mean, I was walking around quite recently looking at a new property that was being constructed that had wood floors, but the wood floors were actually completely exposed below, so there was literally no insulation. I mean, that to me just, well, you know, it'll be cool in winter, cool in summer, but in the winter it'll be blooming freezing.
Yeah, look, and this is I've been inspecting a lot of properties, and you look at the older properties in the older suburbs, you would have thought that everybody, because if you recall the Rudd era, where we got the pink bats and all that that went on there, everybody thinks that every house in Sydney got insulated, but they didn't. There's a lot still out there, and a lot of them have got insulated from even from way before that. I mean, it's just the insulation is just over the years is just next to nothing. You've also got the old what we call the cellulose fiber that's up there deteriorates over the years. So yeah, check your insulation, and also around your, if you've got the old aluminium windows around your homes, check to see how the seals are. Generally, if your house was built in the 70s or the 80s, I would, and you'll know, because the aluminium windows would be the grey, unpainted, aluminium frames. Yeah, check around there, because if the seals have deteriorated through heat and the cold, they break away. It'll be worthwhile getting some caulking compound and gapping them up, because that's where you lose a lot of heat. And I'm saying this, Martin, because I'm expecting a 33% to 35% rise in power bills, in energy bills next quarter. So it's I've been doing the same, but as I've been doing the renovations, obviously insulation and that and sealing around the windows is a very important thing for us.
Absolutely. And it's also worth highlighting, of course, insulation works well in the summer. It helps to keep things are cooler as well. So it actually is a very important element. And once again, if you're thinking of buying a property, one of the key questions to ask is about the quality of the insulation. And I still find it amazing that some people believe that in Australia you don't need insulation. Well, with the power bills where they're going, and Albanese's a little handout as part of the $15 billion package won't touch the sides for most people. Power bills are going to go through the roof, literally. So it's very important to make sure that the insulation's there, and do it sooner rather than later. I expect a run on insulation materials, particularly as the prices rise and as it gets colder. So again, supply is limited in some cases as well. So that's another factor to bear in mind.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, the caulking around the windows is very, very important, inside and out, because you lose a lot of heat through those small gaps. You lose a lot of heat, and you also draw in a lot of hot air. And last but not least, poke your head underneath your if you've got a subfloor area, poke your head under there and see if there's any water trap, because if there is, that's only going to get very damp over winter, and you'll end up with rising damp and all sorts of other issues. So yeah, so look around, poke your head in the holes of your house, but not too deep.
Indeed. Edwin, that's great advice as always. And thanks very much for sparing an hour today. And we'll do it all again next Monday, hopefully. And by then, of course, who knows where we'll be. But I suspect we'll continue to see the numbers come down. The fact is that there's still fear out there. There's still people grabbing whatever they can get and not doing the work. And at the moment, my view is this is never, as never before, time to just relax, take your time, do your due diligence, and make sure that you know that it's a lemon rather than an orange, because the outcomes will be rather different.
Yeah, and this is where you just got to be smart. Be Tyson. That's it, Martin. Be Tyson, be Frosty, and be Tyson.
Excellent. Good advice, Edwin. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week. See ya. Bye-bye.